last time. The music sets us up, and we're here to talk about Avengers. I don't think that anyone can have more ado, whatever ado is, but after much ado, we're finally here. Mike, and Oscar, another episode, bring you our Avengers review. Finally, to cap off the MCU review that we've been doing. It's all been leading up to this big review score, and it is finally here. Welcome to another episode of Mike, and Oscar. I am your host, Mike. This is my co-host, also Mike.
I am also Mike. Look at you using all those fancy French words.
Just three one vowels. Repeated over and over.
Three vowels in a row. Wow, you're something.
So, like we said, this is the Infinity War, Avengers Infinity War, the big review that we've been working up to and leading up to and wanting to give to you guys after a little bit of a delay there. We're finally going to get into it. I guess we're going to start off by saying we're going to hope this is one episode. If we have to chop it up into two, we will.
Right.
But like we usually do with these spoilers, we're going to have a non-spoiler section, a dance breakdown, and then we're going to do full spoilers. We imagine the full spoilers is going to be longer than normal because this is a whole lot of movie. A
lot of movie.
So
a lot of man sitting at this table.
Right.
I'll say it again.
Yes.
And this is a whole lot of movie.
So let's get right into it. Also,
I apologize for that accent.
Also, Mike is going to start us off with a production profile, which is going to take a while for a movie of this magnitude.
It could have been more. I didn't bite into all of the promotional videos.
How dare
all
you?
Of the. I didn't do that for this one because I kind of just wanted to get into the review
right.
faster. That being said, I'm going to take 25 minutes mm-hmm. here. Cast and crew for Avengers Infinity War. I've called it Affinity War many a times.
Yeah, they're all friends. They just get together at the end.
That's the next title. Everybody's been wondering, what's the next title going to be? It's an Affinity War.
Friendship.
Cast and crew. The old Avengers are back. And to show you they're older, they've all changed their beards and or hair since the last Ultron movie.
Yes.
The goatee is dyed and angular and weird as ever for Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark / Iron Man. Chris Evans.
I have such concerns about Robert Downey Jr., what he's going to do once this run as Iron Man is wrapped up, because watching him on his own, he's got like the disheveled hair, he's a little unkempt with the beard. It's like, where are we going here, Rob? What are we doing? You're supposed to be this nice, kempt, beautiful-looking billionaire playboy, and...
I think the beard is real, though. I think like he goes out.
I think it is
out,
too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he goes to all his foo-foo restaurants at night.
Lord, he's got the fucking money.
Wearing
to burn.
That Ice Cube beard. Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure. Well, anyway, Chris Evans has that prime of his life, Grizzly Adams, but immaculately groomed beard.
He's a good-looking man.
He is Captain America. Chris Hemsworth is Thor. He kind of has the same beard from the last movie, but it's a beard and an eye patch,
mm-hmm. yeah.
which is cool.
Accessorizing.
Scarlett Johansson changed her hair as Black Widow.
Now, she doesn't have a beard in this one.
The southern version of Black Widow is Black Widow. That's a terrible joke.
Natasha
Romanoff.
Isolating our southern audience.
What southern audience?
Nobody south of the Mason-Dixon has any interest in this podcast anymore.
I love Texas. I love a lot of the South. I really do. That has to come out more.
Yeah.
She did change her hair. It's a blonde.
Yes.
She went blonde for this one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she looks great as always. Mark Ruffalo is Bruce Banner / the Hulk. Some more gray in that do. But that's immaculately coiffed as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Ultron Edition, Elizabeth Olsen returns as the Scarlet Witch. And I guess she still looks the same. She looks great.
Who has gone on record saying that she doesn't like how exposed she is in that outfit. She says that Scarlet Witch shows too much skin for her liking. And she wants the real.
There's a lot of leg. She's very leggy.
Yeah.
I'm not complaining. Of the Iron Man franchise.
Well, she is.
Of the Iron Man franchise, we have Don Cheadle is back as James Rhodes / War Machine.
Yes.
Paul Bettany is Vision, and Gwyneth Paltrow is Pepper Potts, who puts the pretty pressure on the prize patriot that is Tony Stark.
Proud of you there.
I ran out of P-words quickly.
Plumber.
Got one. Penis.
There we go.
Damn it.
It's going to be a great review today.
Of the Captain America franchise, we have Anthony Mackie returning as Sam Wilson / Falcon. Sebastian Stan is Bucky Barnes / the Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Of the Thor franchise, Tom Hiddleston is Loki, and Idris Elba is Heimdall. From The Incredible Hulk, we have William Hurt coming back as Secretary of State Thaddeus Ross. New MCU franchises are featured as well. Benedict Cumberbatch is Doctor Strange, and Benedict Wong is Wong, and renowned actor Cumberbatch is Strange Benedict, and Strange Cumber is played by Wong Benedict. I'm sorry.
Finkel is Einhorn. Einhorn is Finkel.
Look, Benedict Wong has the same first name as Benedict Cumberbatch, and Benedict Wong has the same last name as the only name of his character, Wong.
Yes.
So as a dad joke artist extraordinaire, I could not ignore all those similarities. Which is, by the way, that's the principle of a dad joke. You know, a word that sounds like another word, basically.
All right, very
good. It's like puns, but without the wit.
Do you have 15 more minutes you can do on this?
Tom Holland returns as Peter Parker / Spider-Man. Jacob Batalon as his best buddy, Ned. Chris Pratt is back as Peter Quill / Star Wars.
You're naming people that I don't even remember being in this movie. That's how packed this freaking cast is.
Zoe Saldana is Gamora. Dave Bautista is Drax. Bradley Cooper is the voice of Rocket. Vin Diesel is the voice of Groot. Pom Clementeef is Mantis. I finally pronounced her name right. I looked it up.
Good job.
Karen Gillan is Nebula. And Benicio Del Toro is the Collector. Some of the recently minted megastars from Black Panther turn. Chadwick Boseman comes back as T'Challa / Black Panther. Danai Gurira is Okoye. Letitia Wright is Shuri. Winston Duke is M'Baku. And Florence Kunsumba is Io. She's the very striking looking guard that we've never mentioned before, but she's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the good Lord, that was just the cast.
I got more.
Right?
And of course, we have some new characters. Josh Brolin plays Thanos.
Yes, he does.
But he has Joss Whedon's eyes. then we have the children of Thanos. We have Terry Notary is Cull Obsidian. Michael James Shaw is Corvus Glaive. Tom Vaughn Lawler is Ebony Maw. And Carrie Coon is Proxima Midnight. Some great names.
Those are fantastic names, yes.
Villains. Yeah, I think some mediocre ones in that collection. But overall, it's a B+ for a collection of tough, nefarious, evil bad guy names. Stan Lee is not the only surprise cameo in this one. I'll leave those for spoilers. Getting into some story inception. In 2014, Marvel announced a 2-part sequel for Avengers Age of Ultron, the first entitled Infinity War. The second was shot simultaneously and was scheduled to be released May 3rd, 2019. So both films are in the can, Michael.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be Infinity War 2, and then they backtracked on it after production had stopped. So I don't know where they're going.
Listen, let's rouse all the faithful, all our fans, and reach out and get a couple other guys. We need to besiege the vaults of Scrooge McDuck and steal the footage for Avengers 4 because I want to see it now!
A lot of casualties today on the Disney property. Yeah. As a couple crazed podcasters were apprehended.
Anyway, Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely, the writers of The Winter Soldier and Civil War, don't be so proud, signed on to write both screenplays, and they drew inspiration from Jim Starlin's 1991 comic called Infinity Gauntlet and Jonathan Hickman's 2013 comic called, Infinity Comic. I also want to point out that if Stephen McFeely married Marsha McWeeney, their kids would have the option of having their last name be McFeely Maywine.
Oh my God.
I just needed to point that out. I'm such a dork. Joe and Anthony Russo were hired, as Kevin Feige puts it, basically on the set of Civil War to direct these two Infinity movies. Feige tells the story. He's like, I walked up to Joe and Anthony. And I was like, hey, you guys want to do two Avengers movies?
You guys are great in Community.
And they both said, yes!
Yeah, right. Nah, we'll think about it.
Very few production notes here. Alan Silvestri is back from the original Avengers to score the films. Winter Soldier and Civil War's DP, Director of Photography, Trent Opelock, returns. Filming began in January 2017 at Pinewood Atlanta Studios in Fayette County, Georgia, shooting back-to-back, like I said.
Yeah, MCU's got a big affinity for doing stuff in Georgia,
right?
Which works out for them.
Back-to-back with Black Panther, mm-hmm. And then shooting both Infinity War movies simultaneously there. It's amazing. That's quite the shoot. It ended in July 2017. So, yeah, 6-month shoot there. The working title of the shoot in January 2017 was Mary Lou. Don't ask me why.
Big fans of Mary Lou Retton, former U.S. gymnast.
Sure, sure. Additional filming took place in Edinburgh, Glasgow, and the Scottish Highlands. They also filmed some scenes outside of the Durham Cathedral in England, some more stuff in the actual city of Atlanta, and more in Queens, New York. Finally, they filmed a sequence in the Philippines. Its estimated budget... you'll have more on this.
Was a lot.
Is $300 to $400 million. Yeah. One of the most expensive films ever made.
Yeah.
Of course, we've covered the record-breaking trailer and pre-sale ticket numbers in our fifth Hollywood Hot Takes episode, number 57 on MMO.
Mm-hmm.
We also covered a fun Disney Pixar bracket in that one, which is still very relevant. I think we did a rapid-fire takes on a lot of upcoming
stuff.
So
angry.
But that was a fun episode. But yeah, Mike, number one has more on specs. So that was it. That wasn't too long.
9 minutes for the cast. I mean, that's not your fault. That's just what this movie has. My lord.
It's a big cast.
Avengers Infinity War. Talk about some specs before we get into some of the non-spoiler review. It was released April 23rd at the Dolby Theater in LA. That was the world premiere, and it went wide on the 27th. As we all know, Anthony and Joe Russo were the directors, Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely. I'm not going to make a joke because I'm a mature adult. Penis. Screenwriting credits with the Stan Lees, Jack Kirby's, Larry Lieber's, not Hex of the comic book world, getting all sorts of credits for the various characters as well. It's produced by Marvel Studios, distributed by The Mouse in Florida. You'll enter the theater a child and exit an adult after sitting through a 149-minute runtime.
The big movie.
That's a long movie, but what do you expect when you have a film 10 years in the making that lists the likes of Don Cheadle and Paul Bettany in the double digits in terms of stars on its list? You want a budget. As also Mike said, somewhere in the $300 to $400 million range. How's
Which
that
means
sound?
400 probably, right?
Yeah, it probably means five, yeah. It's 2.5 times.
So
it,
money.
It broke even. Box office. How about the biggest movie opening of all time? Domestic, worldwide, doesn't matter. This movie shattered all sorts of records, including domestic opening weekend box office, $250 million. Worldwide opening weekend box office, $630 million. Number one ranking in every single territory it debuted in.
Oh my God.
Talking about the UK, South Korea, Mexico, the Philippines, Germany, Indonesia, Thailand, and Japan, just to name a few.
Wow.
Its $114 million rake in its second weekend domestically is the second highest second weekend rake ever for any film, only second to The Force Awakens, which pulled in $150 million in its second weekend in 2015.
Huh.
I'm not done. Infinity War is also now the record holder for fastest movie to reach the billion-dollar threshold, needing just 11 days to accomplish the feat. 11 days. How do you like to make $1 billion in 11 days? That work out for you?
Mm-hmm.
Just to put this entire MCU and Kevin Feige's net worth into perspective, in the history of cinema, Infinity War is the 34th film to earn in excess of $1 billion. Marvel Studios are responsible for six of them, which is, you know, decent for a company that's been in existence for a decade.
Hmm.
Infinity War is the 17th such billion-dollar property for Disney. Cinema isn't dead. It's just owned by Kevin Feige and Kathleen Kennedy. We've been saying this is, without hyperbole, the biggest movie event in the past decade, unless you want to split hairs about the Star Wars saga. But what makes this one different is that the quality of the movie has matched the hype in terms of Marvel needing to deliver time after time, and somehow, amazingly, this time is no different.
You put song lyrics into your copy, by the way.
Mbop. Let's work from low to high in terms of how this was received. It's got a 68 Metascore, which if you've been listening to our MCU review, it's on the upper end of the spectrum there. Not in the record-breaking numbers, but it's high. It's a good mark there. Good for the 79th highest rated release of the year thus far on 53 critical reviews. It does have a high of 100 to its marking, and somebody gave it a 38. Come on. I don't get it. An 84% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes, average of 7.4 out of 10 on 308 critical reviews, 258 of them being positive. A 92% audience score on 36,000 reviews, averaging a 4.6 out of 5.
I'm a little surprised by that. More on, you know,
you think
more
it'd be
on
higher?
It later on. I thought it'd be lower because I thought, like, how is this not as polarizing as Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I don't know.
We'll talk about it.
An A cinema score, and maybe the most astounding number, it carries, as of last night, which would be May 8th, an 8.9 IMDb rating on 275,000 plus reviews, which has it currently tied for fourth place in the IMDb Top 250.
Holy shnikes.
Along the likes of 12 Angry Men, Schindler's List, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, and Pulp Fiction. So we're talking just a notch below Godfather in a lot of people's eyes.
Well liked, yes.
So those are the specs. That's the kind of property we're dealing with in Infinity War. Like we said, we're going to try to do a non-spoiler version first. We'll do it in the terms of our Oscar sprint. Expectations, Michael?
So, yeah, meh. I mean, you know, whatever, bro. It's just another movie. Yeah. No big deal. No. I could not wait to see this. We reviewed all 18 MCU movies in our six-part Marvel rewatch
for
series.
For this reason, yeah.
Perhaps our expectations were too high.
But not just ours. Everybody's were. I mean, you had to. You couldn't. Thanos is a well-beloved and known property. The Infinity War, the MCU, well-beloved. And, oh, my God, how have they been doing this so consistently and putting on the screen? Of course. Here's $400 million to put this movie together. People are salivating for it. Everybody's expectations were probably too high.
However, I think, at least in quantity, mm-hmm. and we're going to talk about the quality, but the quantity delivers some major thrills. And this is what's so cool about the MCU. They've been building up to this for a while, showing you they've been building up to it for a while by all the, what do they call those? The stingers at the end of the trailers.
Yeah,
the post-credit scenes. So, I mean, this is not an accident that this crescendo happened in the way it did.
This has been finely tuned, yeah.
This movie pays off a lot of what we have been watching all along. So to tease my review, I guess, action spectacular doesn't do it justice. I also like a lot of the plot. I like a lot of the storyline. I love a lot of these characters. They deliver a lot of their best. I'm a big fan of this one. I'll tell you how much as we go along. How about you?
Yeah, I don't know how expectations could be any higher for a movie of this magnitude, but the way they are seamlessly writing in, and it is seamless, all these characters into a coherent structure and a coherent plot line, introducing new ones along the way that just make sense and you care about and you we hate and love all at the same time. Mm. It's amazing what Kevin Feige, and I know he's not the only one. Obviously, there have been a lot of people along the way with their hands in the pot, but it's just amazing what Marvel has put together here. Were you disappointed in any aspect of it? The fact that it goes almost 3 hours and you can walk out saying, wow, to me, speaks volumes. Because we've reviewed long anthology-type movies before, Titanic's of the worlds, and there's some glaring plot holes in those. Now, you can poke and prod at this if you want to, and we'll get into some of the stuff that falls short, but there's nothing, I haven't heard anyone that's like, oh man, Infinity War sucked.
I tell you, I've seen it three times. I've seen it in three different formats. Leather seats, just plain Jane. I saw it IMAX, and I saw it in 3D. Leather seats again. Oh, I'm spoiled. I love the leather seats these days.
It's got a fine lumbar.
I tell you, I did not have a point in any one of the viewings where I was just like, here I am again. You know, I spaced the viewings out, but I was committed and I was engaged for those 2.5-3 hours each time. And I'm very happy about that.
You can't say it flies by because you're on the edge of your seat for a lot of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's high tension. It's suspenseful. It's dramatic.
The butt is clenched.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's a beautiful, beautiful movie.
So production values, Mike, I think they're Oscar worthy.
Yeah, if you could say cinematography, sure, but if we're not giving this some best picture love or any of the major categories, if this doesn't win best visual effects, why have the category?
It's insane. I think during the visual effects, if you slant, at least I've been told, if you slant your 3D glasses a certain way, you can see like all the actual money that was used. I think there's like green little...
There's watermarks throughout the film, yeah.
No, you could see the money on screen. Yeah. You could see the hundreds of millions of dollars.
It's unbelievable.
Just in your face. And every format, like I said, I am in awe. And there's goosebump-inducing shots in this movie and sequences, whole sequences, where I'm just like, picture a huge fan blowing my cheeks back going... just flopping around. That's you watching this movie. That's
Sorry,
me watching
I dozed
this
off.
Movie.
What was that noise? Thank you
no,
very
that's
much.
The wrong noise.
Yeah, no,
so that's for something
that's
else.
That's just oral sex.
No, I'm with you. Like, and you could argue, look, you could be that guy. Was it, well, how fair is it to Margie?
Also, that's how I laugh after oral sex.
We've moved past it. That was minutes ago.
I couldn't stop.
It's whoa, you have all this money. Of course, Marvel's, they should have good visual effects. Well, yeah, they should, but they do. That's the point. I mean,
right.
You're so drawn into everything about this movie. Even if you're not a Marvel fan, there's enough here to look at and be astounded by, strictly speaking about visual effects, never mind getting into the story of it.
I don't remember a shot that made me wince, which is something that is almost every movie thus far. I'm like, all right, well, that's 2CG.
You can see. Yeah.
This one I didn't like. That's cartoony. Just the way they shaded it. I mean, I understand that it's CGI. I get it.
Right.
It's not real. The movies aren't real. I know this.
Thanos doesn't exist.
Tell this to myself. But yeah, I mean, you got a big purple dude.
Yep.
Sure when do. In the history of cinema has a big purple dude been scary?
Yeah.
When else?
Barney might have been a pedophile.
Well, but Barney was scary for ironic reasons. And if
no, you're
you
right.
Childhood trauma leading into your watchies of Barney, but...
And we're going to get into the Thanos character, but this is the Thanos movie. I mean,
yes.
He is on screen for a lot of time because there's supporting and making his whole backstory essentially into his motivations as to why he's doing what he's doing in this movie. And
absolutely.
So he's visual effects are throughout the movie because he's on screen so often.
A lot of practical effects thrown in, I think. You know, a lot of things smashing, a lot of debris hitting them. You know, it's pretty cool that they stick to their principles even with such a spectacular setup one after another, which is great, which is just, again, that's Disney being Disney, Marvel being Marvel. That works. That's the formula.
Could say the same about sound. You said how amazing the score was. You're absolutely right. The fact that they've turned that da, 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 into such a noticeable jingle.
I was singing it on the car, whole car ride over, slash during our pre-production period here.
No, it's amazing that they were able
Silvestri, Opelok as the DP, they just do a great job making it epic on the one hand, but also grounding it in reality on the other. And the gritty look from the Winter Soldier Civil War guy shooting it, and then the sound of the big comic, you know, the big comic book feel, the take you back to your childhood. I mean, it's great.
Yeah, unbelievable job.
Wow, we really gushed, didn't we?
Well, it's worth gushing over, and I'm sure Marvel would like to hear people gush spending all that money on this.
The Guardians of the Galaxy have the song Rubber Man thrown into their plot line, which is like...
Rubber Band Man.
That's a great song.
It's actually the only oldie, which I was kind of surprised at. It was the only really old song, classic rock song, that was in this.
Covered by Electric Six, which I was searching for in my brain.
Oh, God, that must be an experience.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I may or may not like that band. I don't know.
I don't think anybody likes them so much as they're just an experience. Much like this movie, you just have to, like, experience it.
His name is Dick Valentine, the lead singer.
Doesn't surprise me.
And he always talks like this. He's funny. All right, performances, Mike. Josh Brolin, Weta motion capture stuff worked fairly well. I'll have some nitpicks on that later on, but I thought, again, making a big purple dude the scary villain is
layered,
an accomplishment.
Too. I mean, absolutely. Brolin's really got to go after it to get this performance down, and there's so many intricacies with look, I'm a Thanos fan. I mean, he sells his ideas pretty well, and the fact that he's doing so much bad, but it's grounded in this really political motivation, kind of was really interesting to me. It's really one of the more, I mean, there's prevalent issues going on in Congress right now that are kind of dealing with what Thanos is doing and the grounds for what he's doing. So that's what I thought was interesting.
We've seen other villains like Michael Keaton and Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah.
Make convincing arguments, right?
And it's nice to see the villains. I mean, obviously Thanos to me is far and away the best villain in the MCU. And we keep saying how MCU has this villain problem, but it's nice to see in their last phase three here.
Villain problem dead.
Yeah. The last phase three, the Killmonger, Michael B. Jordan, the Michael Keaton's, the Ace, the villain problem.
Yes, yes. And it makes for stronger movies. We've seen these movies get stronger and stronger. Our grades have gone up and up.
Yes.
Tony Stark, Iron Man, and I thought a terrific performance by him. I don't know about you. I thought he was really going for it. I know a lot of his stuff is in front of a green screen, but just him interacting with these other actors.
He was so... I'm going to save my review for the spoiler section, but yeah.
I love the Chris Pratt performance as well. Another guy not known for holding dramatic scenes, even though a lot of his scenes are funny. I thought he did a terrific job. I wanted to see more Black Panther, T'Challa. I wanted to see...
Yeah, me too. Especially because the big third act takes place in Wakanda. You think there'd be more with... But maybe they thought that you just had your fill because Black Panther had just come out. So
yeah,
just had a whole movie
I guess. I wanted to see more of an arc for those characters. I wanted to see the Russo brothers kind of feature their old standbys a bit more, even though we got some, they delivered some goods
with
Chris Evans, Cap, and Black Widow, and that whole crew, Winter Soldier. Still, I would have loved more of the Black Panther supporting cast taking on new ground, but it was kind of more of a, like, I don't know, a holiday reunion or a sitcom reunion special where they're just like, oh, applaud them. Here are their trademarks. Here's what they do great. Here's why these characters are so fun. And it's fine. And that's fine.
Yeah, it's just, this wasn't the Black Panther sequel.
And I guess there shouldn't be after it just came out and it just made $1 million, which is a new term, new term just for Black Panther.
New
but
number.
I do want to say the voice of evil sorcerer, the Ebony Maw.
I loved it.
Oh, that's perhaps the most unique and satisfying voiceover work that I've seen
well
in
done.
Recent years. I want every movie coming out to feature that guy as the evil bad guy voice from now on. You know, Carrie Coon and others do a nice job as well, but I was just so just over the moon with that voice. Every rewatch was fabulous. Romance, I wanted to nitpick. You know, the romance might not be great between characters in this movie.
This is something that we keep harping on too. I wish the MCU would just eschew. I understand... You got to have some romance because it's a basis for drama in every movie. So you have to feature some relationship. I just wish Marvel would get rid of them altogether.
Well, I disagree with some critics. They've really slammed it for the romance. And I don't feel that way necessarily, but it's just like, okay, fine. I get it.
I mean, they don't do romance well, but it's not, you know, it's not a romance trilogy.
Neither do we, but
right. It's fine. It is what it is. It's not a big part anyway.
I'll have some nitpicks with the Gamora character. I had those same nitpicks before. I think her storyline is fairly necessary.
It's responsible for my worst scene.
Okay. And yeah, I think we're going to be on the same page there. I guess to tease some best worst stuff before we get, you know, flush it out later. Fights with Thanos are jaw-dropping.
Is there a fight you didn't like in this movie?
No.
I mean, everything was just so beautifully done
unique.
With the effects. Very unique. We've spent 10 years establishing these characters and their powers, and these characters are using their powers. There's no big surprises or new tricks that are learned. You're drawn into these guys doing what they do best, and girls, because man, do the females have their own stuff in
they
this
kick
movie.
Some
it's
ass,
awesome.
Yeah.
So I loved it.
And that Battle of Wakanda, I was worried. I should not have been worried.
Yeah, yeah.
That was so good. I just sit there in my leather seat just going, Rah! I'm just so happy they did such a great job.
Yeah, it was absolutely well done.
They mix in the character work. We're going to flush it out like I said. But I thought the character development is strong. The exposition is woven into these scenes. And again, it helps that you have three movies in some instances.
I was going to say, a lot of the exposition, too, to this movie, or at least to the dread that you're introduced to immediately, is kind of done in the post-credit of Ragnarok.
Yeah.
That feeling of everything's happy. Oh my God, there's an evil here that slaps you in the face at the end of Ragnarok at the post-credit scene. That's exactly where we pick up.
It's like a Game of Thrones season finale or whenever those big set piece episodes happen that just blow your hair back and make your brain explode I have some hair.
You said bear back.
Did I? Yeah. That's very much a Freudian slip. No, I think this movie feels like, and the entire MCU, is the backlash of Hollywood to this resurgence of television. And that's going to be a big theme.
Ooh,
I have.
I like
because
that.
Because this is the answer. Everybody saw that serials are back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the serials have been there before.
Yeah.
In the 20s, they made 17 whatever movies, westerns,
right.
One western character, Okie Bodokie. Okie Bodokie had 45 movies.
Shame!
They made four.
It was the 50s, but yeah.
Yeah, but they, no, I'm talking about like the 20s.
Right, and, right. I got
novels. They used to, serial stories used to sell like crazy. They kind of went through a drought for a while. TV came back, figured it out how it works as well as it can. And serial stories are now what people want to engage in. This is Hollywood's answer to it. More so than Harry Potter. They're building up to this from Lord of the Rings, like we said, which was a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
Lord of the Rings to Harry Potter, going for seven, yeah, eight, whatever that was. And now we have an entire cinematic universe, which is essentially a serialization of one story. And that's phenomenal in terms of big picture thinking. Kevin Feige, Kathleen Kennedy doing it with Star Wars now. But again, to bring it back, Game of Thrones does this to capture the attention of the nation. Same with Walking Dead and all your favorite TV shows, really.
Yeah, change the zeitgeist and right, narrative.
Right, now
yeah,
you have it, that happening at the movies.
It's a water cooler going back to what cinema... It hasn't been in a long time. You're right. And that's where the articles come out with the ringer that we criticize so much as cinema dying, because has only once in a couple of years does a movie really grip pop culture and the day-to-day life of everyone and make the water cooler conversations, the office conversations, everything about them. Because you're right, in the recent years, it's been the TV show, the Game of Thrones, the Breaking Bads, the Office,
yeah,
stuff like that. And now you have, maybe not since Star Wars, I didn't actually even hear that much about Star Wars with, not The Last Jedi, but
Strike
Force Awakens.
Up the same conversation.
Yeah, maybe not since Heath Ledger's Joker was around.
Maybe.
Has this been? Like, so it's a really good point by you.
This is the kind of movie you want to listen to a podcast about after you see it. You want to look
at
YouTube.
Which is good for us.
Yeah, it's great for us. We kind of do something right. Yeah, we do some things right. I've been chomping at the bit to do this review. I think we're off to a good start here. And yeah, if you have not seen this movie yet, we're going to break for spoilers coming up.
Yeah, get your ass in the theater.
Get your ass in the theater. See this one, and you're going to, I think you're going to want to have us as a go-to for that spoiler section. So, Mike, watch or don't watch?
No, skip it. If you've seen, especially if you've seen the 18 movies prior, just, you know.
Yeah,
this of course you watched it. It's the biggest fucking thing in the world.
This is a must-see. If we've ever had a must-see,
yes.
And like we said, for Oscar reasons, it's best visual effects for sure, if not more.
We're going to get into, as well, before we do the dance party, about the Oscar chances of it coming up. Going to have some stuff to say. It's very interesting the way that the whole entire paradigm of the way we think about these movies has shifted.
And right.
It's a fascinating conversation. We're at a place that I don't think we would ever thought we would have been at 15 years ago.
This kind of feels like Fellowship of the Ring to me. But
yeah,
if Fellowship of the Ring had The Hobbit come out the same year and The Hobbit featured an all-black cast and it was really, you know, so Black Panther's going to get more,
yes,
at the Oscars, rightfully so.
Rightfully so, yeah.
In terms of the zeitgeist, in terms of how important that movie is, and that we're totally fine with that.
Yeah.
But this movie as an accomplishment is deserving, in my opinion, and I would say the next movie is set up to be like that, Return of the King.
I really want, at some point, just troll us. I just want the next movie, like just Josh Brolin with like maybe half the Thanos face on, just like eating a bag of chips, like just doing like the Sunday
you
crossword.
You said this before.
I
love, want to be, yeah, disappointed.
Yeah, I just love really, really meta jokes.
That much.
Yeah, I would appreciate
that.
It.
You would like a deadpan ending,
yeah,
that totally does Sopranos.
Yeah, like
on
he's
you,
pouring a cup of coffee and he's just mad that he got some on his shirt and he's like dabbing it off for 20 minutes.
Well, I guess if they hired Darren Aronofsky to direct the future Avengers movie, you might get your wish. So stay on the lookout, I guess.
Are we going into spoilers?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Here we go. Spoilers ahead.
This is a spoiler warning.
Spoilers. Spoilers.
Mike, and Oscar Sprint, spoilers!
This is the spoiler section for Infinity War. If you have not seen the movie, Honestly, I mean, were you just born? What are you doing? What do you do if you haven't seen this movie?
Go see this.
Yeah, for the love of God. It's like $7 for a movie these days in the daytime.
A little more than that.
But you skip work. You go to a matinee. You get a little popcorn.
MoviePass has a new rule where they don't let you see the same movie twice now.
Is that for every movie or is that just, I thought that was just for Infinity War. They only let you see it once on MoviePass.
Oh, really?
I think so. But I don't know.
Because I saw Phantom Thread like 6 times in leather seats.
MoviePass is doing some things.
And this movie, I couldn't see it again on my MoviePass. I still paid money to see it twice more.
It's definitely worth your time and money. But yes, this is the spoiler section. If you have not seen the Infinity War, you want to hear about the specs, the production profile, all that good stuff. It's in the first half hour or so of this recording. From here on out, we're talking about all the ins and outs, the plot spoilers, the best scenes, worst scenes, highlights, lowlights of Infinity War, and taking a look forward at the end of it to see where we go from here. Because this is so chock full of everything, and we're going to kind of address everything as they come and every character as they come up, that's why we're not doing a big plot overview. You're not going to hear me spieling on for 2 or 4 minutes about what happens in this movie, because everything that happens kind of has its own place, and we're hopefully going to dissect most of it for you. And again, if you're in this section, most likely you've seen it anyway, so it's not too much that we
Spoilers.
Need to tell you what happened. Right. So let's start with some carryovers that Mike had from the non-spoiler section.
So you mentioned this in the non-spoiler section. I'm glad, and you just talked about plot. The structure of this film is built around Thanos.
Yes. This is the Thanos movie.
This Thanos is the quote-unquote protagonist of this film. He is the main character. He gets the central dilemma. He gets the central crisis. He gets the final crisis. He is, in his own warped way, he is the hero of this story, sacrificing his life, he thinks at the time, and even we think at the end, to fulfill his quote-unquote destiny. He's sacrificing his loved ones and his life. I can't believe it.
He's who I pray to at night now.
What? you're joining the cult of Thanos?
Yeah. He makes a lot of good points.
And yes, he's convincing. I did want to say that, like, the Josh Brolin performance, when he's wincing, when he's, you know, kind of when he's half asleep with Mantis on his head.
Right.
Some of those are shots that I didn't love, where he's like
that whole scene. I have issue. But that's. I mean,
didn't love that.
In the big picture, Josh Brolin, I think, was really, really. He was great as Thanos, and it's such that reserved dialect and that pace of talk, his cadence is so calm. The guy is literally talking about the end of the universe.
Right.
And he's just talking like this, and it's so matter-of-factly, and it's just how things have to be. It was beautiful. It's
he's
everything
evil, and he's got that hidden evil in him. He's got that edge about him where he just kills. And yeah, he's scary. And for a big purple dinosaur, I can't believe they made that scary. The other main carryover point I wanted to make from...
Take note, Jurassic World.
Yeah, I said something about exposition being woven in. Compare the MCU and how they do it with what DC has done. I mean, just think about DC and Batman versus Superman. And okay, we got two people, but we gotta have a Wonder Woman backstory now, and we gotta do that. We gotta
go back. Here's the Flash. You like the Flash, right?
Right. Yeah, they had momentum.
Right.
They had momentum with Batman building up, Superman building up. Clash. Oh, but wait, we got a new
now,
Batman.
Here's Doomsday.
A new character playing Batman, so we got to stop and give you his origin story again. We got to... All those origin stories have to go into those movies.
Now,
this doesn't do that.
To DC's credit, not that we're going to make this about a DC pod, but...
Right.
The Dark Knight, the Nolan trilogy, was a finite ending. It had nothing to do with Batman versus Superman, really. So they kind of had to start from scratch, which is fine. But at the same time, they, to your point, they acted like they had a decade worth of build-up already in the audience's mind as to who this character is. If you're starting from scratch, start from scratch like Marvel did. Yeah. Introduce your Iron Man, man. Let Batman be himself. Fight. Justify your Batman.
It's weird.
Which they didn't do.
No, they make assumptions, and yet they still give you the backstory, and they have to pause the whole gosh darn plot to give you the backstory, and then they do mental gymnastics to somehow make the backstory relevant with the actual team-up stuff. That's the whole problem with these team-up movies.
Now, Whedon is on board there, so maybe they'll write the ship.
They'll figure it out, I hope, but look at the genius of this film. Like, just the Guardians storyline, for instance. You get back on the ship. They're playing an old classic song. Drax has a one-liner without even saying a word. He's sleeping. Gamora's singing along with the music, so you remember. So every little character bit in that scene harkens you back to everything you've watched and loved from them. So they don't have to say, oh, remember this that happened. And then they weaponize any of that kind of exposition into jokes. You know, you get the whole ego stuff, the whole Kurt Russell bad guy stuff from Guardians 2, where you left off with these characters in a joke about Peter Quill and Thor.
Yeah.
Oh, but my father, this is what I...
Right. Now, I've heard a lot of critics take umbrance with that. Was this too funny for how serious this movie should have been? Did they try to shoehorn too many one-liners in for your
life? It's never too funny. No, wrong. I agree. Get a sense of humor. It worked for me too.
I agree.
No, I totally disagree. I think the tension relief, the way they just simply structure the film, one sequence to another, you get funny scenes and you get serious scenes back and forth, and it's a clinic on tension relief.
What Marvel movie hasn't had those comedic undertones so far?
Yeah,
I mean, they've been there throughout. It's really a staple of the whole universe right now.
And it's a necessity of blockbuster filmmaking. You're there to have a good time. You're not there to see the last emperor. You're not there to see Bernardo Bertolucci's
You're
movie,
never there to see the last
just
ever.
Stuck in sadness in a parade of sadness for 3 hours. You can go to another movie to see that.
Right.
You may have a catharsis that leads you to a very difficult ending, like we're going to get to now, but you had a ton of fun along the way.
Yes.
And this movie accomplishes that.
Totally agree. And mate, you're on your game today. You've like prepared for this or something.
A little bit.
Good for you. No, that's a really good point on your part.
I don't talk so good, but other than that.
let's jump into if you can pick some best scenes from this 3 hour saga. What do we have for some best scenes?
Thanos punching the moon with his gauntlet onto the heads of Iron Man.
That's my best scene too. That was my favorite part of the movie. Thanos has the Infinity Stone. He grabs hold of the moon on this some planet where Tony Stark, Spider-Man,
Titan.
The Guardians.
It's Titan.
Okay.
I would say, yeah.
Thank you, because I didn't know it. And he uses the moon as a slingshot, essentially. To bash Iron Man, which again leads to another joke. Hilarious, Tony Stark. If you throw one more moon at me, I swear to God,
I'm going
to
lose it.
That was funny. But no, that was, and the visuals in that, oh my God, in that scene, he grabs the moon as seamlessly as like you pick up a napkin, and it looked the same. It looked so beautiful, and it fits so well into the structure of what Thanos had been capable of up to that point.
Visual effects should win on that shot, that sequence alone.
Without question. It's not close.
But just in case you didn't love the visual effects in there, I love the Maw fighting in New York City there with Iron Man, Strange, Spider-Man. I love that sequence. And the Maw is so cool with how he fights. I mean, he's using all the stuff to levitate. He's using all the stuff as weapons to throw at them.
Really, I hope he comes back. I hope he's not got lost in space like he seemed to be and frozen out there forever. Because you're right, and you were gushing about him in the non-spoiler. Great villain. Great villain. I mean, you don't know a lot about his backstory. He's just kind of evil for evil's sake.
Right.
But for him being what he is, he was all-powerful. He was a total thorn in the side.
He does have some characterization to him as well, because he needs to glorify, and he's the hype
man. Oh, he's a disciple,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's the totally drank the Kool-Aid. Mm-hmm. Been drinking it for years, and it has to be like the
all
herald.
All glory and power to Thanos.
Oh,
yeah.
I love that. And then that voice again is just fantastic. The fight between Scarlet Witch and Vision and those children of Thanos was terrific out in Scotland.
The Glasgow scene. That was, first of all, let me make an overall point about best scenes, is that there are 72 fucking storylines in this movie.
Right.
Okay? And the way that the Russo brothers have them all run into each other, it's like a highway system.
Yeah.
There's no bumpy traffic, there's no construction, you're just seamlessly going in and out of all these stories. You go from the new Asgard, which is a ship, that's how you start, to you get Thor being sent by Heimdall back to the Sanctum in New York City, and Tony and Pepper are talking about kids, by the way. Tony fucking Stark's talking about having kids.
Let's sail away and live forever. I was worried.
So was I. I was like, this is it. Of course. I mean, but, okay, so then you introduce Doctor Strange because Banner went into the Sanctum. And now you're back into the Sanctum and you're fighting with New York. And then Tony and Spider-Man go from New York to getting on Thanos' ship as they get away. Then they go from space. It's everything is just running into each other. It's great. It's beautiful.
Through line writing.
It's right actually there. Art. Like, it's that is the most, one of the most batshit conventions is having these 17 storylines and making them into this coherent plot in under 3 hours with all these huge.
There's like a
scenes.
K story. There's never mind a B story.
It blows my mind. It really blows my mind to think about. But that, So, what were we talking about?
Best scenes. We're talking like we're going through the action sequences.
Yeah, I'm sorry to get off track there, but that I was that blew me away.
Great point. So the scene where Cap kind of makes his big appearance with Black Widow.
We have the same best scenes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where she's the shadowy figure in the dark.
Oh, how great was that?
Bum, 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 bum.
Catches the spear.
Yes, oh, my God.
Terrific. Black Widow. I mean, we understand.
That's
Black
the point
Widow
I was going to make next. We're
is
on the same
immortal.
Page.
She is immortal, not immortal. She is immortal. She's going toe-to-toe with that thing who's stealing the staff of their back to herself, and they're just hand-to-hand combat.
How
Russo brothers, nobody better at it.
In Wakanda, I know you haven't gotten there yet, and we will, but they give Black Widow, Danai Gurira, and Thanos's, I forget her name, but the girl that Thanos has. It's this all-out, girl-on-girl, badass brawl. They're all going at it, and they're just going for it. And they give this like a good 5-10 minutes to just kick ass, girls. Go for it. And they do. It's so good. It's so awesome.
Better than WrestleMania?
Well, I mean, let's not be stupid.
No, come on. I thought you were going to go. I thought I had you right at the edge of your sanity. Just gushing, gush, gush moment.
No, it was,
you are quite the fan, my friend. You like wrestling.
You think Ma's a disciple.
So, yes, the Battle of Wakanda. Awesome. Two-part series, right? Two-part sequence.
Yes, that's where I was. And the way that they handled the Battle of Wakanda. You said that you had reservations about it in the previous.
Yeah, where's the Air Force? But they showed you
the
enough
reasons
of the Air
why.
Force. Yeah.
And the reasons why the ground game was as it was. And some simple questions were answered. How we always talk about why you don't address these things. How come these directors don't think to address these scenes? How come lizard people weren't able just to go around and get behind the group, the Avengers there? Well, that's explained.
Yep. The obvious objection, I guess, if you break it down, maybe you can find some quibbles. And, well, that's not smart. But
it's 3 hours.
Right. But the fact that when they open it up and then they hold them there and, they're going to be overpowered, but it's all for one of the biggest visual climaxes of the movie with Thor coming. Thor visuals from Ragnarok to this movie, some of the best in the history of the MCU. When it's thunderstorm, black backdrop, and his lightning axe is falling on bad guy heads, I just, there's nothing better looking than that.
What did you think of Peter Dinklage, giant?
Okay, it's my worst scenes. I'm going to get there. Right. I love Peter Dinklage, but I have it. So that's in my worst scenes. I just thought the first sequence of that battle was so awesome, just from the incoming of the monsters, and then you got the Quiet Place monsters, which is really fun. I loved those monsters in a Quiet Place. I love them more here. I mean, that's really effed up and gross what they do to just like force themselves through the force field.
They're sacrificing themselves.
Wow.
They just want to get through it. They're total disciples.
It's bloody and nasty, and it looks terrific. And yes, you got. I would have loved to see my only, quibble is that I would love to see all those helicopters who you see later. I get it. They're in the mix later, but all those Wakandan helicopters should have been firing down at them as well.
Above,
like that should have been maybe they didn't have quite enough money for that. But
bad directions, maybe. Yeah,
that battle was kick ass. They wanted to feature Falcon and War Machine there. Yeah. So
now,
I get it.
Another best scene and the through line throughout the movie, every scene that Thanos is just, he's relentless. He's this relentless beast, just keeps coming and
beats
coming
up the Hulk.
And coming. Takes care of the Hulk like the Hulk did Loki in the first Avengers movie, no problem, which actually makes the Hulk.
The definition of muscle flex scenes
for a bad guy? He's so capable, he's so intelligent, and he's so strong and powerful that the way that he is handled throughout this movie is just beautiful. You have five Avengers taking him on and Titan, and they can't overpower him. You have, not to get into the deaths too early, but Scarlet Witch sacrificing her love.
Right.
And Thanos saying, hey, man, I get it. Good job. Let me just reverse time real quick and run that back. It's like, he's so unstoppable. It's so great to see.
And that's why, even if you can predict what's going to happen in the next movie in terms of results,
right,
you want to see it happen because, yeah, you got to defeat Hannibal Lecter in, like, capability.
Yeah.
So how do you do that? Yeah. It's going to be fascinating to see how Marvel and all our favorite people have to figure out how to beat them, number one. And then actually seeing it happen is going to be a spectacle to behold. Yeah. I can't wait. I wanted to piggyback on that point there where you said that, okay, his muscle flex scene, or where I said, which mic am I? the muscle flex scene where Thanos beats up the Hulk accomplishes all the muscle flex scenes of the Joker, right? From the Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Which is, to me, it's like, all right, he beats up the Hulk. I don't have to see Thanos
right. Conquer
one planet after the next. So when we get to the planet conquering flashback, it doesn't have to be Thanos just going arg and beating up and conquering.
It's an emotional scene, yeah.
It's an emotion. They use that as the emotional scene with Gamora. It's just so efficient. Again, the writing in this movie, like you said, is phenomenal for a million reasons.
So I guess after the highest of highs, you want to kind of bring it down. What issues did you have with this movie overall?
Right. I think I'll get into more of the character stuff later, but I love some of the character moments too as best scenes. But in terms of the worst scenes, Guardians action stuff wasn't great. Like, I think if Thanos could mess with reality, why doesn't he do that for the rest of the movie?
Well, that's your biggest problem with anything when you deal with time warping and time travel. There's always going to be, well, why don't you just always do it?
Why don't you make everybody a two ribbon person?
Right, exactly. So I could totally see where you're coming from with that.
I'm going to get to my Gamora problems later, but this has always been a Gamora storyline problem because it's just a tonal mess in a way. Peter Dinklage's accent falls apart a few times in that sequence. Now, I love Peter Dinklage. He's going ham. He does a nice job. I think he goes with his Tyrion voice, right? And he knows how to say all the major British words
right. In
his Tyrion voice. But now he's trying to go an octave lower for this Eltree voice.
Right.
And the octave lower, he doesn't know how to pronounce certain British words. So it happens once or twice. And I've been listening to these critics just try and put their finger on, and they've literally saying all online like crazy, I don't understand what was missing out of the Peter Dinklage thing, but I can't put my finger on it. And this is the finger. This is the giant finger coming from this podcast.
Oh, it's a finger.
It's the accent. The accent fails. It's like when all of us try to do an Australian accent or a British accent.
Sure.
I've never done this, but I mean, other people have. And your accent goes from British to Irish. Well, why does that happen? Because you don't know how to pronounce certain words in that accent. So that's what happened to him.
That's interesting. not something I had thought of. You're right. There is something a little lacking in those Dinklage scenes. I thought the idea of having a little person playing the giant was a little on the nose. I mean, would you do that if it was just... Would you do it the other way? Would you have a... I don't get it.
It's fine. I mean, it's a cool sequence with Thor and the Guardians.
And it's important, obviously. It's the biggest...
Super important. I mean,
it gives Thor his new axe, I guess, now to defeat Thanos.
It gives you the reversal of the film at the end. It sets up that major reversal of, this is the comic booky plot line that's supposed to work. Oh, we got the MacGuffin, right? The MacGuffin, the new axe, supposed to work. Nope. Should aim for the head. So I guess the Gamora stuff, do we get into it?
That's my worst scene. I appreciate what they were attempting to do with the... I don't know if this is the same track you're on, but for me, the Gamora stuff, I appreciate what they were attempting to do with the emotional link between Thanos and Gamora, because obviously it's the biggest part of the Soul Stone and blah, blah, blah. Yep. If you're going to do this, I don't know if they knew this was the long-term plan, but if you're going to do this and have the Gamora-Thanos relationship be such an intricate part of the Thanos character,
right. And
this is the Thanos movie, why not space that out? If you want to establish, get the most out of Thanos being an actual empathetic character to an extent. Why not have the baby Gamora stuff in one of the Guardians movies?
In screenwriting circles, they call this hiding the ball. And I think in many ways, they're hiding the ball that Thanos is the protagonist of the film. So they don't want you to know that. Because
right.
If you know that, then he's going to triumph at the end. You'll know he wins.
Right. Which, sure. But it just felt so... it felt like they were squeezing it in. Like, if you had
I agree.
You could have done a double back... What do you call it? Flashback.
Right.
Where in the Guardians trilogy or Guardians movies, Gamora is talking about her upbringing with Thanos. And you could have shown the perspective that Gamora looks back, and when she looks back, she quickly saw Thanos responsible for killing all her family. And yeah. Then in this movie, you could have gone back to that scene, in the same scene, and shown the whole emotional arc of it.
The pathos, aka empathy, sympathy that we should have, some kind of combination of empathy and sympathy. I'm not smart enough to know the full definition of the classical Greek terminology there, but it's not accomplished, and I agree.
Yeah, it's lacking.
My biggest problem with the whole Gamora character has been from the Guardians movies, because in that relationship between Nebula, Thanos, and Gamora, that triangle, you have Thanos torturing a little girl named Nebula.
Right.
Her whole childhood, literally torturing in the most disgusting medieval way possible. You have that note, right? That tone, that thing
you
set up in your brain.
He's incapable of anything but, right.
And then you have Gamora allowing that to happen, not allowing, somehow being involved where she beats Neb. Does she know that Nebula is being tortured to that degree? Does she understand that? And they kind of make a lot of jokes about it in Guardians 2. And so Gamora's character, like, it just doesn't... It's not accomplished. Like, I want more. I want you to flush that out. I understand it's dark territory.
You don't think her rage is enough?
They just went that dark. You got to flush it out, in my opinion.
I'm with you.
So I think our dueling worst scenes here come together in the fact that it just didn't jive for me, the whole Thoros, Nebula, Gamora plot line.
Yeah. And that's the biggest problem I had with the whole...
I said Goros.
He's the four-armed guy from Mortal Kombat, made a special appearance.
Whoops.
You said there would be cameos in this movie.
Yes.
Speaking of cameos, the whole Soul Stone plot line that they run through, Red Skull makes a reappearance. What was Hugo Weaving doing? Was he too busy for this, by the way?
I guess they got an impressionist to do his voice.
Bring him back.
It fooled me when I heard his voice. I was like, wait, Hugo. Again, my brain doesn't work as fast as other brains work. And I'm going to say more on that in a minute. But I thought, okay, Hugo Weaving, what is he playing? Oh, wait, he was Red Skull. And then put it together.
Yeah. But anyway,
Hydra.
So Red Skull is back, but he's in the suspended animated state. The whole Soul Stone where Thanos has to sacrifice Gamora and the thing he loves. Don't do that in one shot. You just had the scene before establishing that Thanos loves Gamora and this is how he saved her and blah, blah, blah. It's so rushed to me.
It's efficient in a way because it's definitely efficient. Like, they get you the basics of the story in 3-4 scenes, right? They're accomplishing the arc in 4 scenes. All right, Thanos flexes muscles, beats up the Hulk. Done.
Right.
He's super powerful. We get it. Thanos and Gamora have one flashback. Thanos and Gamora have one back-to-back scenes together with Nebula and then in the room. And then, boom, Thanos and Gamora are out there getting the Soul Stone.
Yeah.
So that's 5 scenes. It's amazing. He's the protagonist of the movie. 3-hour movie, and you only have 5 scenes that build you to the central climax.
Yeah.
Isn't that Woody Allen show on Amazon says 9 scenes to the crisis? I forget what it's called.
He's doing well.
No, that's called 9 scenes to the crisis or something like that. 8 scenes, whatever it is. I should know this as a writer. I should know this as a writer. I don't.
Speaking of that scene with Nebula being tortured, the cinematography of it with that camera shot, she's straight on and the camera pans to the left and she's separated already and Thanos is... That was really cool. But yeah, so it seems like a lot of our issues come with that Gamora storyline.
It's 6 scenes. Crisis in 6 scenes.
Well, there you go then. So we were one
short. They might, but maybe you can say that one was a dual scene, so it probably happened in 6 scenes. It's amazing.
Good for Woody Allen.
No, but Marvel's but Marvel hit that storytelling formula.
No, I get what you're saying. It's a point well made, well taken.
I but here's the thing. I don't disagree with you. I don't think it worked perfectly. Yeah. I'm with you.
Something missing. I wanted more time to appreciate the emotional connection before Thanos throws his daughter off a cliff.
I was surprised, and I like the argument of that scene where she thinks she goes one up on him, like, you don't love anybody, right? You're a big purple dinosaur. And she, and then he's like, turns around, he's got tears in his eyes, and
that was really cool.
That was really, really good. Cool. It worked every time I watched it.
Well, since we're here talking about deaths,
yeah, let's transition.
Want to go right into it? So.
You're good at transitioning.
Thank you. So Thanos snaps his fingers. Everyone's dead, right? Half the population. That's it. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Well, that's how the movie kind of ends. He does get the time stone helps him get that final stone out of Vision's head. Once he's finally able to get that, he's the most powerful being in the galaxy. He can snap his fingers and get rid of half the universe.
And it's great that they like made that a part of the exposition throughout. Oh, he can just snap his fingers, Gamora says.
And that's why it's frustrating too. Because Gamora says that in the first Guardians movie. Right. So you have that through line. Just make the fucking flashback. Anyway, I'll give it up. But so this is the powerful being. He does reverse time. He's able to bring Vision back after Scarlet Witch has to kill her own love to kind of save the world. Brings Vision back. Takes the stone out of his forehead. Re-kills him in a different way.
Serious dilemmas, though. Again, in terms of writing, amazing how they pull that off in a freaking comic book movie. It's just amazing. We don't trade lives. All right, Cap's argument's a little weak there, right? Okay, it's a little weak. Oh, no, we're going to flush that out. We're going to flush that out for the rest of the movie. Yeah. That's a great job.
Yeah. So he does snap his fingers, and we start seeing, which has been memed to death online and social media all over, I don't feel so well. And people start fading to digitized ash.
Spoiler alert, you jerks. So you want to go backwards from important down to the pre-snap deaths?
Let's do that. So let's work with the deaths that we think are permanent, at least.
Oh, you
want to
go
forward.
Okay, so we'll hop back.
So at the beginning of the movie,
Heimdall, Loki
immediately dead. And that's, again, part of your establishing Thanos as the big, bad, all-powerful being. He takes care of Hulk, no problem. Puts a spear through Heimdall's chest. Loki tries to be Loki and mischievously get one up on Thanos. No, not happening.
So now you're okay with this because you had a little Loki fatigue in our Thor Ragnarok review.
Yeah, I predicted Loki would die, so it made me happy.
You were right.
I said Loki,
and you were satisfied.
I said Loki, Iron Man, and Cap, and I was one for three there.
Idris Elba gets a hero moment. Why didn't he send Hulk and Thor back? I guess he couldn't get the Bifrost to do both.
Wasn't in the script.
Again, another aside early on with Peter Dinklage saying, oh, by the way, I think this axe also brings up the Bifrost.
Yeah.
And it does. That's great too, by the way. But Heimdall and Loki. So Heimdall gets a hero moment and then is killed. You know, Thor freaking out. And Loki, after how many times we've seen him die, you know, not his best plan, but obviously he's pushed against it. It's just coming off Ragnarok where their home world is gone from the apocalypse.
It was nice too to see Loki, like he politics first to get in Thanos' good grace at the very end. You're gonna need a guide if you go back to Earth. Let me help you. Blah. And obviously that was a big setup.
Son of Odin with the tip off there. I thought it was well done.
Yeah,
it was
good. You say
condensing so much into so short of a time for such a long movie. It's amazing how they pulled it off. The writing is phenomenal. So
people that probably won't be seen again.
Heimdall, Loki. Gamora is the next like major character to go, right? So
I disagree that we're not going to see her again, though. I think she's coming back.
You think she's coming back? Because I've heard a lot of theories that pre-snap people are dead.
I think I agree. I've also seen the theory that Gamora herself is the Soul Stone. I've seen that Gamora is going to come back as Mistress Death, because Mistress Death in canon in the comics is basically Thanos' love interest.
Yeah.
So being that, again, Marvel doesn't do romance very well, they could easily turn that into a different type of love. Instead of a man and a woman, it's a father and a daughter, and she can come back as Mistress Death and be Thanos' love interest in that way.
Assuming that the Guardians of the Galaxy come back. We'll get to them.
Yes.
Is there a Guardians of the Galaxy without Gamora? Does that mixture work? Because you don't have a deadpan straight man, straight woman character in the midst of all those nut jobs. I mean, she's her own kind of nut job. We've established this.
Well,
but does that chemistry work?
Nebula can. You're not going to have the love story between Star-Lord, but Nebula can step into that role.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, you're correct. So they in each one of these deaths, you can make an argument, a pro and con, and I think it's very important that, well, in most of the deaths, I'll get to there. I'm teasing a lot of stuff that we talk about 2 minutes later in this episode. But you can make an argument that Gamora does not have to come back.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Okay. So Gamora, dead, probably. Question mark.
Vision, like you said.
Probably gone.
Probably gone. Again, we can do without him a little bit.
Maybe we had half a movie with him.
Scarlet Witch can move on. Hopefully. Peter Quill can move on. I mean, Peter Quill can move on and hang out with a bunch of different colored chicks again. And, you know, his story can move on. And then, yeah, start Scarlet Witch, and we can make her an actual character. You know? No, I mean, she does
witch.
She gets a great dilemma, like I said. But we can make her a character that doesn't depend on a male character. Yeah. So that would be awesome. But, again, the we don't trade lives dilemma, that whole theme works itself through the Vision storyline brilliantly, I thought. And even the reversal that once, like, okay, we got one of our most powerful superheroes, Vision, caught up there. Like, he can do away with this army just on his own.
Yeah.
Scarlet Witch, right. The two of them could do away with the army, right?
But they need each other.
They need each other up there. Yeah. And then the second Scarlet Witch steps down, and even though Okoye makes that great joke, the second she steps down, we got the son of Thanos, whoever that was, Clavis Maw. No, I got the names mixed up.
Clavis.
Clavis is an evil sounding name.
Jebediah Maw.
he's there, and he takes
and
over.
And it's magic versus magic, absolutely.
Okay, so now this is snap.
So we'll talk deaths. About people that have disappeared into ash.
The Winter Soldier gives Captain America someone to grieve, someone close to him to grieve. He's only spent three movies in that bromance. So.
And could be the linchpin to Cap and Tony finally reconciling.
Right.
Because he's finally removed from the picture now. He's been the object of diversity, but or adversity between Tony and
argument and for Captain. Winter Soldier actually being dead.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yep.
Now, if he comes back and he gets a payoff, the best joke of the movie is freaking Rocket Raccoon saying, "Oh, I'll get that arm."
Yeah, that was very good. I'll get that arm.
So there could be more with Winter Soldier. You can actually get a full resolution with Tony, and you can make the other argument in the opposite way. So that's number one. Falcon,
who didn't do much in this movie,
right? Again,
more than Hawkeye.
More than Hawkeye. But complaint that we don't get the Captain America characters featured as well. I guess these guys were bored of, the Russo brothers were bored of their own characters a little bit. They wanted to play with the others.
Well, you could see that. Yeah, why
not? Okay,
that
well, I mean, he's got some nice moves. He's got some great aerial shots and whatnot. But no, there's not a story
very intricate
arc.
Not intricate to any plot.
He's just an ally there. But he's very important to the Captain America storyline.
Yes.
I guess if they kill Cap in the next one, he won't be. But Falcon, so Winter Soldier, again, arguments for and against. If you have another Captain America storyline, you kind of needed Falcon. If Cap is going to die in the next one, you kind of needed Falcon. You need Falcon, don't you? Because he's one genuine friend that's not Bucky Barnes.
Well, when we get to the end of this, the post-credit scene has a lot to do with what's going on with these people. But I'll get into that.
So Falcon and then Scarlet Witch, after all that, after she solves the dilemma, she goes.
What a rough day for her.
It was a bad day.
You got to kill your husband and then you just disappear. You got to watch but kill your husband, bring your husband back, watch someone else kill him.
And
then you disappear.
It's a bad day.
It's not a good day. Yeah.
Bad.
It's the opposite of that. A
couple of days maybe it was, but that's a bad day. Did the Spider-Man death break your heart? I'm probably a little out of order
Mr.
here, but
Stark, I don't feel so good. I actually thought that line was so like borderline cheesy,
right?
Because it's been done to death so many times in that way. But everybody else loves it, which is kind of because I'm a sheep. Changed my opinion of it just because everyone.
In terms of the drama of it, he's crying and Stark.
The emotional impact between losing. Yeah, I'm talking about just that one line.
Now I'm thinking in the Spider-Verse, you have another Spider-Man. You have another character that's going to take over Spider-Man. So in my brain, I'm like, oh my God, Tom Holland's expendable.
Doesn't
make
any sense. They did. They had these painstaking backroom negotiations between Sony and Marvel.
I'm not proud of myself.
To get this character into six Marvel movies.
You're right.
This is his fourth.
You're right. I'm not going to argue with you, but this was what my brain did.
Tom Holland disappearing like that was the first tip off to me to say, oh, we're not done with these characters.
No.
Because I was thinking, up to that point, I was like, oh my God, yeah, right. We are getting rid of all these people. And then Tom Holland disappears, and then T'Challa disappears.
Right. So Black Panther, fresh off the $1 million movie, gives Okoye, who's, I guess, going to, Danai Gurira is going to be very important. M'Baku, Shuri. I think Shuri's still alive. We don't know.
I hope so. Yeah. They need her to be Iron Man. So
yeah, give those three the next supporting roles in the next movie. Yeah. Give them more than that. So to me, when the Guardians started to disappear, including Peter Quill, that's when I said,
that
oh, wait.
That was your tip-off. Okay.
That's when I said, oh, wait. That's when my brain started to work.
So you thought T'Challa was expendable.
I thought M'Baku could be Black Panther.
8 hours reviewing Black Panther and gushing
right.
over how beautiful it is.
Again, you are right.
It made $1 billion. And you're like, oh, he's gone!
When I saw this for the first time, and even 5 minutes after it ended, I was in so much shock.
We gotta get a new Black Panther!
I was assured that I knew we've established that more than one person can wear that suit. Michael B. Jordan, T'Challa's father.
The fit of the suit?
Danai Gurira could be the next
not
Black Panther,
the,
is what I'm saying.
Not the big MCU view of how Chadwick Boseman has been amazing and is probably going to get a Best Actor nomination?
Again, not proud of myself or where my brain went, but that's what happened. Now, when the Guardians started to die, my Dave Matthews Band white-loving music brain said, okay, wait a minute, this can't happen.
Not done with classic rock.
Peter Quill and Drax. Yes, that's when I started to
It is interesting that all the Guardians, except for, I think, Rocket, it seems like Rocket stayed.
It's just Rocket. Groot's dying.
Yeah. Well, Groot sacrificed. Yeah.
Groot can't die for good. Of course not. And then Peter Quill, Spider-Man, Black Panther. Of course not. We're gonna see them again. And to prove it, we have Spider-Man Homecoming 2 already on the MCU for the next phase. We have Guardians 3 on the MCU for the next phase. No, Black Panther hasn't been announced yet. But this was playing in my brain as well. So we got two more. Doctor Strange goes. Now, that's a big plot point, and that's a big part of the plot that we have not discussed yet. Doctor Strange flashes forward in time to give us some
14 million outcomes.
To give us some hope.
And there's only one in which the Avengers win.
The first time I watched it, I was like upset at Doctor Strange during the movies. Like, why is he doing that? Why is he giving him the stone, time stone? Why is he not helping
He has to.
Yeah,
that's the only way they make it out. Yeah,
my brain didn't put it together
the
first
time. That was beautifully done.
Yeah,
beautifully done. So let's talk about a little bit of the fall. You talked about Spider-Man Homecoming 2 already being on the docket.
Right.
The next Marvel movie is going to be Ant-Man and the Wasp. Ant-Man, Hawkeye explained away that, oh, they made the deal. That's why they can't be in this movie.
Right.
I thought, I hated that. I hated that.
They have the next movie coming out, so they don't want to saturate you with those three yet.
You have them wave in a cab leaving at the beginning. Just come on. You established this is supposed to be everyone, so I hated that.
How many millions more dollars do you want them to spend, Mike?
You fucking Paul Rudd would do it for a tuna sandwich to be in this movie. So I hated that, but okay. They're not in this movie, Ant-Man and the Wasp. They have their own movie. They stand on their own. Fine. The next Marvel movie, I think, is going to be Captain Marvel after Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Right, correct.
Okay. The post-credit scene to this movie, to Infinity War, the final scene, we have Thanos who snapped his fingers, half the population dies. We see him kind of looking out exhausted. He looks like a farmer that just had a hard day's work, looking out over the land, peaceful and calm.
My God.
It looks like, oh, I can finally rest.
Bad guy wins.
Yeah, I could finally rest. Fine. Post-credit scene is the Colby Smulders character and Nick Fury driving through New York City. People start disappearing. Mayhem starts erupting.
Right.
Helicopters, which I thought was kind of a weird look to go to New York City and have a helicoper crash into a building.
It's Avengers 4 colon The Leftovers, Mike. That's the next
right.
movie because that's the same plot line.
So what happens is Nick Fury makes an emergency call and he says, as he's saying motherfucker because he's Samuel L. Jackson, he fades away into ash and we see that logo on whatever cell phone or whatever he is. That's the Captain Marvel logo.
walkie-talkie looking thing.
Right. So here's my theory, apropos of nothing and based on nothing. I think all those characters go subatomic, and they go into the quantum realm.
Which now, the comic book readers are laughing at us. Now, we realize that. Again, we're not comic book readers.
Right. This so we is, don't know. This is, I'm just going based on what we've been introduced to thus far in the MCU.
Yep.
I think the quantum realm, which was introduced in the original Ant-Man, going subatomic, where time and space have no meaning, I think that's where these characters go. And it seems to me, and I can't take full credit for this, I think it was Slash Film was the article I was reading this about, and it just made a lot of sense. And I didn't agree with some of it, but
yeah,
it seems to me that Captain Marvel is going to be tasked with, since her movie takes place in the 90s, I think her movie is going to be about, hey, Nick, if you ever need help with the quantum realm, or people don't really disappear, people don't die forever, they just go here during certain things, and this is how you can bring people back. I think that's going to be the establishment leading into Avengers 4.
So, if that's the case, I'm not going to love it. Just on on paper, I don't love that. Because it's just awkward to me. I would rather just, all right, they're dead, and we come up with a brilliant way to bring them back by reversing time. We've already shown that can happen.
But see, that's where you and I differ. It's totally subjective. But we did.
You want to see them again before they brought back.
Well, no, it's just we did the reversing time thing. That's been done. And the only way you can do that, at least thus has been established, is with the time stone which Thanos has.
Right. It can be done.
I would like to come up with a more creative way and a second option, which is...
I know nothing about this quantum realm other than, Soul Stone, Thanos was on another plane of enlightenment. I just keep thinking of Beverly Hills Ninja. The plane of enlightenment. That's where Thanos was, but it was a purple plane of enlightenment at the Soul Stone planet, whatever that was. So we have Doctor Strange basically tipping us off that this thing can still work out well. And then you're right. We have a Soulverse, or we have a quantum realm. We have a couple different options. We have a time stone that can reverse time. So, yeah, you're right. We don't know how it's going to happen. But I'm just talking about, I don't think I want to see Peter Quill making jokes with Black Panther. Of course I want to see this. Yeah, you're probably right. But I don't necessarily
just nodding
need
my head.
I don't need it, because you can make a movie with the old Avengers saving the next generation of Avengers, and that's fine.
So what are you saying? You're saying that you hope these people are gone forever?
No, I don't hope they're gone forever. I just don't need to see them in 3 or 4 scenes at the beginning of the Avengers 4, I don't think. Maybe if you do them right, I'll like it, but I don't know. Give me what I never knew I always wanted.
That's all.
That's all.
That's it.
That's the impossible task of every screenwriter and the impossible task of every storyteller. Give the audience what they never knew they always wanted, and that's hard to do.
Looking forward to Avengers 4. Again, I think this is all set up so Captain America and Iron Man can sacrifice themselves together, right?
I keep going back and forth on it in my brain. Like, do they have to kill the characters? Can they just retire?
Oh, believe me, I want them to just retire, because I'd love in 30 years if the MCU is still cranking out stuff.
What kind of story is this? This has always been a "but it's still okay" kind of a story, right? They gave us more than a whiff of death with this movie.
How about the deke that we had, the misdirection? We were all sure that Tony's vision that he saw in Ultron was going to be a scene in Infinity War. Mm-hmm. Apparently, maybe in Infinity War 2, or maybe in that fourth Marvel movie. It wasn't in this one.
Well, but still, that Tony getting stabbed was a hell of a moment. Like, the wind was knocked out of us.
Scared the shit out of me. Yeah. I thought sure that was it.
So if they do that and then they still kill him in the next movie, I would be surprised at this point. I think they set it up to make you think that. I don't know. Here's the thing. Here's the beauty of it. The Russo brothers, Kevin Feige, they go into all of this knowing what people are saying, are going to say.
Yeah,
you know, they can anticipate. And that's a part of their genius. They anticipate what the audience thinks, and they've proven as much by, you know, quote unquote, basically arguing with the obvious objection in every scene, right? They're by grounding it in a reality. I've said this screenwriting principle 1,000 times about the MCU. And so they've shown us that they can't anticipate what the audience reaction is going to be. Yes, they filmed these movies simultaneously, so maybe something happened that was different than what they thought. But most likely, they're going to know what we're thinking in a way. They're in my head.
There too, though, is the fact that the second movie's already in the can.
Right.
So they have an ending. Something's happened. It's on film.
They can always reshoot And they don't have to tell us.
Not if I kidnap Robert Downey Jr., they can't.
That's right. Let's storm the Scrooge McDuck mansion. Storm the magic kingdom.
Let's start putting a bow on this. Let's put an Oscar lens on Infinity War. So that's what we do here as an Oscars podcast. This one's probably going to be an Oscar. Something.
I think it's worthy. I think my grade's going to show that in a second. But I do. I think this could be Best Picture worthy. I think it's an A-minus 92 all day.
I have a very similar. I'm 91. Yeah, I'm an A-minus as well.
87 won it last year for me.
If this is nominated. Okay, two questions, I guess. If this is nominated, just on your guessing, would that disqualify or exclude Black Panther from being nominated?
So here's the thing. Black Panther is a 100,000 times the better narrative, right? The better Oscar narrative.
Better story for the film.
Which the Academy is sucker for, right? It's more important of a movie, right? Not maybe not to the MCU. Maybe you can make the argument it's more important to the MCU. The fact of the matter is it has more pathos, more catharsis there.
Better performances.
Better performances,
because it's
yes.
a performance-driven movie.
So you can make an Oscar-y argument for Black Panther more so than you can for Avengers Infinity War. We'll rank them later in our 19-to-1 re-rank, but I honestly believe Avengers Infinity War delivers more goods as an action movie, as an action spectacular, as a blockbuster, delivers more goods for me overall in terms of spectacle, in terms of, I mean, just budget alone. But visual effects, like I said.
But is there a world in which both are nominated for Best Picture in the same year?
Yes, I think it's possible.
Think so? Okay.
I would be surprised.
I don't.
I would be surprised.
I would be shocked. Yeah, I'm like you. I think the Academy isn't at that point
They'll say one or the other.
Right.
I mean, you're probably right because...
I think they're both worthy. I'm not saying they're not. They are fantastic movies for very different reasons and in their own way. And I haven't seen two better movies yet this year.
Will they probably both wind up on each of our top tens? Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, and if that's not Oscar Best Picture worthy, I don't know what is.
Second question, if Infinity War is nominated for Best Picture, do you consider the glass ceiling shattered with comic book movies or big budget blockbusters?
That would do it prematurely. Well, here's the thing. Like, number one, they would cannibalize each other on the vote. Black Panther and Infinity War,
sure.
If they're both nominated. So that would be a convenient way to have to not vote for Black Panther for a lot of the Academy. I don't know. That's putting it harshly. But that would be that. Black Panther probably would not win if it's nominated. It's probably not. Honestly, it's probably not going to win regardless. Well, I guess we'll get to it. Maybe it'll get the crazy momentum. It's a higher ranked movie than we had Shape of Water. For both of us,
in
terms of grade.
Without question.
So this has happened before, though, where they don't get nominated. The Marvel movies get written off. However, you can make that counter argument. Lord of the Rings, the first one was nominated, the second one, the third. Fantasy movies never been nominated before. Finally, you get a raucous applause and critical acclaim for a fantasy movie. And yes, they do put it up there. Star Wars, they do put it up there.
So... obviously, we're talking visual nominations. We think this clearly should win.
This should
be nominated.
Yeah, this should win. I mean, honestly, this should win.
Do you have any performances of the Big Seven? I'm taking out Best Picture, so I guess the Big Six?
I mean, Robert Downey Jr. is Best Supporting Actor, and he legitimately is a supporting actor in this movie.
I can
movie.
See that. So I would be surprised, but I could see it, yeah.
Yeah, he'll be on my list, and maybe you and I will vote for him. We'll see, but... he's on my list, legitimately on my list.
Yeah, outside of him, I would struggle to find a performance that I think from... because, again, this isn't a performance-driven movie. This is a set-piece movie.
Yeah, but the sound categories, mixing
all
and editing...
This should have a Mad Max run. It should.
Cinematography, visual effects.
Either this or Black Panther, because there hasn't been anything better.
Well, we did say in the Black Panther reviews that one of our quibbles was... we had quibbles with a few shots that we didn't love. A lot of people have talked about the finale of Black Panther being... something they didn't, it was too CG. I'm not going to spoil Black Panther now, but it was too CG.
Those people are dumb.
A lot of people have said that. So I just don't feel, reading the tea leaves, that it has as much momentum visual effects oriented.
Right. Fair. But look, this is a movie. This is a hell of a movie. I would not be surprised to see it on a Best Picture nomination. It better win a couple other underscore categories.
Yeah, I agree.
And I don't know what else we can say about it.
We can't say everything about it. You know, we tried to say as much as possible, and I'm sure we're going to think next couple of days, oh, damn it. But, you know, there's more Marvel movies coming out. We'll probably do them as movie events. Ant-Man and the Wasp this summer. Yeah. Probably won't be able to resist that one.
No. I'm excited. It's very exciting times for the MCU. But Infinity War is in the books. Part 2 or Avengers 4 or whatever you want to call it is going to be on the docket for May of 2019. But for now, we have snapped our fingers and half the world has disappeared. And that's where we are in this animated suspension. Let us know what you thought about Infinity War. Did you have more problems with it than just the Gamora stuff? Did you have other stuff that you had issues with that we didn't quite see? Be sure to reach out and let us know. Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on the Twitter machine. You type into Mike and Oscar on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud. We should be everywhere. We're Mike and Oscar on Reddit, MikeMikeAndOscar.com, MikeMikeAndOscar@gmail.com to send us an email. We're everywhere, so just type in MikeMikeAndOscar. Feel free to give us a like, a rating, a shout-out to us, just saying, hey, we'll usually respond to most people that we can.
Yeah, and those few clicks on social media really helps us, a review certainly on iTunes, and yeah, word of mouth. Yeah, please help us spread the word about our podcast. We're fairly versatile now. I think we've proven this.
We do a lot of things.
We do Netflix, we do themed episodes, we do retrospectives where we mine Oscar history, and of course, we cover the hell out of an award season. So I think we've proven to ourselves and to our audience that we can have an off season here where we dive into the MCU and be a bunch of, you know, fanboys.
Total nerds.
And yeah, also, yeah, absolutely. We put an Oscar lens on it as we do with most of our year, and we'll get to the serious pictures later on. But it's been fun in terms of this build up because we've had some pictures that we didn't think necessarily would be serious contenders. I think Infinity War and Black Panther, at least in quality, in terms of my grades, should be contenders.
Yeah, without question, I'm with you there. So I guess for one last time, let's go with the play out with the Avengers stuff. And
great song.
We will see you guys later. Reality sucks. Keep watching movies with us. Be sure to check out our other MCU review episodes if you have not yet. And we will see you guys next time.
See ya.